Okay, we'd like to thank Karen and Jake Abelevitz for sponsoring this morning's Locks and Learn Lili Nishmas, Jake's beloved parents, Eliyahu ben Abba and Leah Bas Avram. Their neshamas should have an aliyah. Before we properly begin the shiur, I just want to make a shout out to Paula Bradman, who made already, this is going to be the cover of our Haggadah. I'm doing this to show our hakaras hatov to Paula, but also to encourage everybody to send in their submissions for the Haggadah. We're on it. We're working on it. So everybody, please send it in. Okay. So, two sheets. Perkei Avos, Perek Bet, Mishnah Yud Dalet. This is the last Mishnah in our sequence of the five students of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. We have been doing this for months. This is the last one. We're going to ask questions that we've asked similarly to the other types of Mishnayos. Meaning, we were introduced to this set by saying that there are three statements that are being said. As we'll see in this Mishnah, there is presumably more than three statements. How do we connect each part, each phrase, each clause to each other and come out with three is going to be important in how we're going to interpret it. But the most important thing and the main message that we're going to talk about today is the concept of Dama Shetasha Blapikoris, which is going to be in the Mishnah. That's going to spend most of the time talking about that idea. So let's just jump in all the way on the top of the first page. Avos, chapter 2, Mishnah 14. Here's what the Mishnah says. Rabbi Lazar Omer. Rabbi Lazar says, Have a Shaku Dilmo Torah. So number one, I bullet pointed these just to point out to you, to highlight that there's really four ideas here. Have a Shaku Dilmo Torah. You should be shakud. How we translate shakud? They translate it here as eager, diligent. So we'll see some mefarshim on that. So have a shakud lomo Torah. You should be diligent, eager to learn Torah. Number two, vidda mashetashav l'apikoros. You should know what answer to give to an apikoros. So they translate apikoros as Epicurean. We'll see exactly if that's completely accurate according to all the mefarshim. Well, what is that? Yeah, we'll deal with that. Don't worry. We'll spend a lot of time on it. Exactly what's going on here. Number three, vidda lifnei miata amel. You should know before whom you toil. And number four, v'neman hu ba malachtecha sheyishalim lecha schar pula secha. And you should know that your employer, presumably God, will pay the reward of your labor. Okay? Four ideas. How do they connect? Are we going to connect one to two, two to three, three to four? How are we going to end up with three ideas at the end? So look at Rashi here. So Rashi's going to tip his hat to what he thinks the three are. Source number one, Hevi Shakud, is number one. Vidda Mashitashav, number two. Vidda Lifnei Miata Amel, Mihu Bamalachtacha. He links those two together, which would be number three. Hare Shlosh, that's the entire commentary of Rashi on this Mishnah. Hare Shlosh is the only two words he adds. But his point is that number one is independent, number two is independent, and number three and four are connected. And again, logically, we can understand that. Number three and four seem to flow from one another. Know before whom you toil, and that you're going to get paid. Right? There's going to be reward for that. So Rashi links three and four together. We'll see a little bit later towards the end of the page that that's not agreed upon by all, but we're going to take a little bit of a detour for a second and look at source number two, which isn't dealing with the amount of things in the Mishnah, but rather what does it mean, shakud? So what does have a shakud lilmo Torah mean? So this is photocopied from the Masifta. This is this book. I've referenced it numerous times. I rely heavily on this. It quotes tons and tons of sources, and then I usually try to look into the primary sources. With this specifically, I had a little bit of trouble because they don't really tell you where they are when they're picking up. They quote the Rambam here. I look to try to find where this Rambam is. It's not, I don't believe, unless I missed it on this Mishnah. So I'm not exactly sure where this Rambam is. And then he quotes another concept, which is a little bit off the beaten path. So I just figured it was easier to give you the photocopy for now. So what does it mean, shakur? Right? We said before, diligent. Let's see. So the Rambam here says, Kasav Shishkeda Muvna Mihirut Vehishtadlut. So those are two concepts. Mihirut, what does that mean? Quickness. Okay, that's where the eager translation came in. Now, quick isn't always good. And this is what you have to deal with when we talk about the concept of zrizus, alacrity, doing things with swiftness. Is that always a good thing? So, to some extent, yes. In the right context, yes. So here, meaning learning quickly. So I'm just going to, as they say, sometimes I'm going to, this is a bad phrase in a number of fronts, but sometimes people say I'm gonna daven up the Gemara, or I'm gonna daven it up, which means that just like when I daven, I don't actually pay attention, or I say things quickly. So too when I'm learning, I'm gonna say things quickly, right? So that's not exactly, and we've spoken about this. That's not the ideal way of approaching things. But I'm just saying it for here that's a problem, right? So when it says here to do things quickly, we're not necessarily saying read quickly, learn quickly, don't pay attention to what you're saying. I find it hard to believe that Chazal would promote that. So as soon as you can do it, don't procrastinate. Right, get right to it, not do it quickly in the sense of get it over with. Right? Good. So the Rambam here says Shkeda Muvna Mihirut Vehishtadlut. So he puts two things together, again, quickness as well as effort. Milashon HaKatuv, he quotes a pasuk from Yirmiyahu, Ki Shoked Ani Al Dvarai, means that I'm going to do something quickly, I'm going to follow up on it quickly. So that's not the first possibility of what Shakud means. What is another possibility? Oh, Shemuvna Hasmada Vehergel. So Hasmada means to do something with effort, and Hergel means to create it as a habit. Right, so you're going to put effort, you're going to make this learning into a habit. Miloshen ha-pasuk, a different pasuk, Lishkod al-dal sosai yom yom. Okay, and that in the footnote, which you don't have here, he quotes a Me'iri on Mishlei, who says that that's what it means, hasmata beherdes. So we have a bunch of possibilities, all seeming to go towards a similar direction, is that when we learn Torah, we should do it with effort, we should do it with, you know, don't procrastinate, get on with it, and put your full effort into the learning. So now the question is that, as we'll see in a moment, actually skip down now to source number 7 and we'll move backwards. In terms of, remember, Rashi said clause 1 was different than clause 2, so have a shakud lomotor was an independent idea. It's a nice idea, right? Rabbi Elazar is telling us when we learn Torah, learn with effort, learn with hasmada. Number 2 is damashatash of lapikoros. Know what to respond to in apikoros. Again, we haven't understood what that means yet, but it's a totally, according to Rashi, separate, independent idea. If you look in source number 7, Rabbeinu Yonah says not that way. Rabbi Elazar Omer, it's the bottom of the page, have a shakud lilmo Torah, vid dam ashtashav es apikoros. That's, he's quoting it. Now, his commentary, shi yikva atzmo lilmo Torah, you should set yourself to learn Torah, kidei shi yada. You should learn Torah diligently in order that you can answer what the apikoros says. Again, we don't know what the apikoros is telling you in the first place. We have to understand how is Torah going to help us figure this out, etc. We're going to get there, but I just want to lay the groundwork here that these two might be connected. Learning Torah diligently, according to Rabbeinu Yonah, is connected to the fact that that's going to help us fight back against the apikoros. So who is this apikoros? A routine, right? I mean, you could fit that in anyway. Meaning, it's routine. Do it carefully. Do it in depth. We're actually going to see a little bit later towards the end. I'll give you again, plant the seeds a little bit here. Remember who was Rabbi Elazar ben Arah? What was his praise from Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai?
Innovative.
He was innovative. Good. He was the
overflowing spring.
He came out. He was in-depth learner. So we'll see if that's going to be important towards the end. Okay. So what is this apikoros? Who are we talking about? What are we talking about? Okay. So what is an Epicurean? What is that? So I did this a little bit out of order. Go to the last page you have. I was going to do this at the end, but I think it makes more sense to do it now. So source number 16, the last page, page 4 of 4, source number 16. This is your Wikipedia entry on Epicureanism, okay? So just to note, we're going to see most classical Mepharshim do not link Apicurus to Epicureanism. The words are similar, but there are some who do. I quote, the Misipta quotes it from the Tashbetz, and the Encyclopedia Talmudit on the entry of Apicurus also quotes, I'll just read it to you inside for a second, you don't have this here. He says, Yesh Mepharshim Shapikorus Humilashon Hefker, we're going to see that in a second. But he says, V'yesh Omrim Shapikorus Nikra Al Shem Philosoph Yevani, he's a Greek philosopher, Apikor, Shaya Kofer Belokim. He was somebody who denied God. So there are some classical Mepharshim who do link this concept of Apicurus to a specific Greek philosopher, and that's where this Epicureanism is going to come in. So just briefly, we're not going to go too in-depth on this, just for the sake of time, as well as not everything here is that important, but I want to give you a little bit of an overview as to what the problematic thought specifically of Epicureanism is. Epicureanism is a system of philosophy, this is again source number 16 taken from Wikipedia, a system of philosophy based on the teachings of the ancient Greek philosopher Epicurus, founded around 307 BC. So this has been around a while, around 400 years, as the people in our Mishnah are being players in the world, this philosophy has been around for almost 400 years. Epicurus was an atomic materialist, we don't have to worry about that right now. Skip to the second paragraph here. Epicureanism emphasizes the neutrality of the gods, that they do not interfere with human lives. So that there's no hashgacha. The gods don't care about what human people are doing. It states that gods, matter, and souls are all made up of atoms. Again, that's not for us now. But that's so point number one here is that Epicureanism said God doesn't care about you. They don't have to do with your daily living. Go to the next paragraph. Epicurus' view was that there were gods, but that they were neither willing nor able to prevent evil. Again, something also that's not in tone with Jewish thought. So gods don't care about you. Gods can't prevent evil. There's no hashgacha. Right? So this is a problematic philosophy that is popular at that time. And now the question is, this is a broader question, so how are we going to be dealing with this philosophy? So now the question is it specifically talking about this philosophy or is it a broader point? So now flip back. Yeah. Okay, so you're using the term Apicurus as a colloquial term that we're using it nowadays. Apicurus means anybody who doesn't believe in what we think is important, oh, he's an Apicurus. Right? Now, the question is whether or not that's what the Mishnah is saying is probably not. We have to see some other Mishnayos first. We'll put it all together. The question, what we're dealing with right now, this is the essence of what we're dealing with, we don't have an answer yet, is when we say Apicurus, are we specifically referring to a specific type of Apicurus? Right? Is it a specific type of philosophy that we need to know how to answer? Or is it against anybody? You're referring to Apicurus within the Jewish realm. Right? So you're saying, this person's Jewish, they know everything, but they still don't care. They still don't follow it. We don't know if that's what this is talking about.
Why would anybody else argue it?
So you're assuming that there was no interaction between the, let's say, rabbis of the time or the elite class of the time or even the regular people of the time with people outside of their realm. And that's not true. Right, so if you go back to this time in Jewish history, and presumably throughout Jewish history, there's always been, except we were in a ghetto and we had no interaction with the outside world, there's always been interactions with other philosophies, other cultures, other religions. And the question is, I mean, this is what, you know, just Psukim in the Torah have to deal with hundreds of years before this, is what are you supposed to, how are you supposed to interact with all of these philosophies, with all of these religions that are not us, right? And that's really what this Mishnah is dealing with. How do we interact? It is not the correct assumption to say that there was no interaction. There was an interaction. And now the question is, how do we interact? Should we interact? And if we're going to, do we do it half-heartedly, right? Or do we just say, I'm not going to talk to you, I'm going to talk to you, what do I need to know in order to talk to you? There were disputations, and now we're just spanning Jewish history. In the medieval times, between the Ramban and the Christian people of his time, there were interactions. Right? So now there's a lot riding on this. How do we deal with interactions between us and other philosophies, other religions? Let's see a few sources, and then we'll broaden that. We'll ask some questions if we need to. Source number 3. So we're back on the first page. So this is a Mishnah in Sanhedrin. This Mishnah explicitly uses this word apikoros. And the question is, what does this Mishnah mean? So the Mishnah says, this is actually interesting because the beginning of this Mishnah, this is Perek Chelek in Sanhedrin. The beginning of this Mishnah is actually customary when you read Perkei Avos to recite the beginning of this Mishnah. So the Mishnah says, Kol Yisrael Yesham Chelek L'Olam Haba. All of Israel has a part of the world to come. Shene Emar, it says in Yeshayahu, V'amech Kulam Sadikim L'Olam Yirshu Aretz Netzer Mata'ai Ma'asei Adai Lehit Pa'er. So the Pasuk seems to indicate, it indicates according to the Mishnah here, that we, L'Olam Yirshu Aretz, you're always, right? Jews are always going to get Aretz here referring to Olam Haba. Okay, very nice. Now here's the problem. What's the next line of the Mishnah? The Elu She'ein Lehem Chelek L'Olam Haba. Right? So we started off, clause A was, everybody has Olam Haba. But here are the people who don't have Olam Haba. Right? So what do you have to do in order not to get Olam Haba? Ha'omer Ein Tchiyas HaMeisim Min HaTorah. If you say that the concept of the revival of the dead is not from the Torah, meaning that it's not sourced within the Pesukim, that is going to get you kicked out. The Ein Torah Min HaShemayim. And if you believe that God did not give us the Torah, that's number 2, is going to get you kicked off. And number 3 is the Apikoros. Alright, so that's the third one. So what do we know from this Mishnah? Apikoros does not mean somebody who doesn't believe that the Torah is from heaven. And Apikoros does not mean somebody who doesn't believe in Tchias Amazing, because they're 3 separate things. Right? So Apikoros is referring to something specific, not those two. So the question is, what is it referring to? Unclear from the Mishnah. So look at the Gemara source number 4. Okay, so you want to keep going? It's not... Okay, so correct. Rabbi Akiva says, it is relevant, but it can get us far afield. Rabbi Akiva says, Afa kor besvarim achitzonim. Even somebody who reads outside books. What does it mean, outside books? We can give an entire shiur just on that topic. It's not the topic for today. It doesn't mean, presumably, again according to most, that any secular book. It means, the Gemara refers to specifically the Sifrei Ben Sira. There's a bigger topic. There were books that were similar-ish to Tanakh that people at the time were at threat to overlap, to confuse with books of Tanakh. And those Sfarim HaChitzonim, these Apocrypha, they're not part of Tanakh. Rabbi Akiva is saying, don't read those, presumably because there's a danger that you're going to confuse them with something that's holy. That's a whole separate discussion. If something's specifically not holy, and that there's no threat of confusion, Rabbi Akiva himself says, like Sifrei Homer, right? He quotes Homer, then you're allowed to read that. Maybe not you should spend all your time reading that. Maybe you shouldn't read that in depth, right? But if there's no threat of confusion, then it would be allowed. So that's a separate topic, not for now. But Rabbi Akiva does add that fourth problem that will get you kicked off of Olam Haba realm. Okay, but for now, Apikoros. So what does it mean? So look at source number 4. Remember, the Mishnah does not explicitly say what Apikoros means. The Gemara picks it up. Apikoros. Rav v'Rebbi Chanina Amri Travayu Zeha Mevaze Talmud Chacham. Somebody who embarrasses, disgraces a wise Talmud Chacham, a wise person. Now that I mean, it's interesting. I don't have too much information on all of this. That's sort of out of left field just from the Mishnah, right? The Mishnah doesn't indicate that, but that's the way the Gemara later understands what it means.
Is it the person or the teachings of
a Talmud? That's a good question. From at least what we have right here.
Because it seems out of place. All of a sudden you're talking about these concepts, and all of a sudden you're talking about a personal attack on a human being, which has no place here.
Right.
Because it seems out of place.
Yeah, so fair, but there's a lot of discussion on this. I'm not going to go into all of that right now, possibly because I'm not aware of all of it, but also because it's going to take us far afield. But if you see, the answer to your question is going to be in the next statement. Look at the second statement. Rebbe Yochanan, Rebbe Yeshua ben Levi, Amri zeh hamevazeh chaveru b'fnei Talmid Chacham. This is a whole other level. Somebody who embarrasses his friend in front of a Talmid Chacham. That's for sure talking about embarrassing of a person, not teachings. But here we have two new concepts that on par with Torah's not from God. I don't believe Tzias HaMesim is from God, right? To you're embarrassing your friend in front of a Talmid Chacham, it seems to be on a different realm, but I think the point here is that we're trying to say it's not. These are really bad things. These are important things that you should be aware of. And if you don't have an awe or respect for our teachers, for our sages, then that's going to run into a lot of problems also, right? That you're going to end up basically kicking out most of the Torah because, I don't respect this guy's opinion. I don't respect what this rabbi said, so I'm not going to follow this. I'm not going to follow that. I'm not going to follow this. That's going to be underlying. That's going to be a big problem. Yeah.
Could it be that all these things have in common that if you don't believe in Hashem, you don't believe in somebody you're answering to? These are things that are seemingly maybe not connected, but
right. So notice what it didn't. Yeah. Notice what it didn't say. None of these said that you don't believe in God.
I know.
Right?
But it's above that. That's what connects to the group. That fact that you believe in God and you have to answer to somebody that's not somebody. That's Hashem.
But all these people are saying we believe in God, right? But I don't believe in T.S. Mason.
Well, they're not saying that they believe in God.
No, so it's assumed that they do. Right, so it doesn't say, I'm just pointing out here, what it does, what we don't have, it's not even, right, it's not even a question, right, it's not even on the table. There's nothing, everybody here, presumably, from the description here, I believe in God, but I don't believe, this is a nuance. I can even believe in Tzias HaMesim. I just don't believe that within the Torah itself, there's an explicit reference or an allusion to Tzias HaMesim. That's a detail. That's not like we're not talking necessarily, huge. Torah Min HaShemayim is pretty big, but again, I can believe in God. I just don't believe in Torah Min HaShemayim. Is a separate story.
Maybe it wasn't a big deal at the time. I mean, right? There wasn't any philosophy at the time of atheism, right?
So I'm not sure if that's true. You would have to know all the Greek philosophies at the time. There were, I'm sure. That questions some level of their nuances in what God's relationship to humans were.
Right. Just reading the whole thing on the back, but atheism, effectively, it's almost like atheism, but even they believe in God. They believe they had nothing to do with the day-to-day world.
Right, so that's not atheism, but right. We don't believe in the Hashkaf element. Right.
That's what I want to say. Yeah. It's almost the definition of Epicurus, they didn't deny existing of the God.
Right.
Now we think Epicurus is an atheist. That was not atheist.
Right, so Epicurus is definitely not an atheist, at least in the classical sense.
They deny the relationship of God with people and humans to God. They are separate entities.
Well, again, so that's Epicureanism. So far, the Mishnah, the Gemara, we don't have that. So I'm just pointing out, so far in the Mishnah, the Gemara, the classic definition, the Wikipedia definition of Epicureanism is irrelevant. It's not. It doesn't talk about that. Okay, let's see a few more sources. Hold on. Let's see a few more. Because some of this is going to come out. We didn't finish this idea. So let's do. When we finish this page, I'll take the questions. Source number 5 here. So now the Rambam on this Mishnah in Perkei Avos tells us what is this what does this word Apikoros mean? So Milas Apikoros. Notice what the Rambam says. The Rambam was, at least at some part of his life, really holding in Greek philosophy. In the Mor Nevuchim, he does quote the concept of Epicureanism, but here he seems to not. He says, Milas Apikoros, he Milas Aramis. It's an Aramaic word. Not like we said from the other opinion that said that it's a Greek philosopher. The Rambam says it's an Aramaic word. So what Aramaic word is it similar to? In Yana, Hahakola, V'Hazilzul B'Torah, or B'Chachmei HaTorah. It means somebody who keeps light, who makes fun of either the Torah or the sages of the Torah. Uvelefichach manichem shem ze bestam al misheinu ma'amin biyisodas Torah. Now the Rambam starts to broaden out, like you were saying before. Therefore, we're going to use this name as a catchphrase for anybody who doesn't believe in any of the Yisodos HaTorah. And this might be problem. You can argue on the Rambam on this, because remember, according to the Mishnah, these are three separate ideas. The Rambam saying no, Apikoros means everything. Any problematic philosophy that you have against the Torah, you would be called an Apikoros. Oh, mivazes achachamim, o eza tamar chacham shiyahu rabo. And in addition to this catchphrase of not believing in any fundamental idea of the Torah, it's anybody who embarrasses the sages or their rebbeim. So that's what the Rambam says in Sanhedrin. What's this Aramaic word? Can anybody guess what the source, if he's saying apikoros, what do you see in apikoros that means hakola vazilzul? Keeping something as hefker. Good. So look at the last three words on this page. Rabbeinu Yonah says the lashon hefker hu. Hefker means free for all. Right. To remove. I'm just loose. I don't care about this idea. I don't care about this rabbi. I don't care about this. I don't care about that. Lashon hefker. So that's the, if you go this Aramaic route, that it's the shoresh apikoros has to do with hefker. So that's where you're going to get all of these ideas. If you look in source number 6, this is what the Rambam says on our Mishnah. Amar lamad dvarim shetashiv bahem al apikorsim mina umo. So you should learn, remember, we're just defining what apikoros is. Remember, the context of the Mishnah is that we have to know what to respond to this apikoros. So who is this apikoros? So interesting where he goes here. Lamad dvarim shetashiv bahem al apikorsim minha umos. You should know what to respond to the apikorsim of the nations. From the Mishnah and the Gemara, what are we talking about when we talk about apikoros? A Jew who doesn't believe. Now all of a sudden we're using this term and saying it's also applying to the other nations. The titvakeach imahem, and we have to fight them. We have to argue with them. V'tanelahem im yikshu lecha, and you have to answer them if they're going to ask you a question. You have to know what to respond. And he quotes another idea here. Amru lo shanu al apikoros goy. So the Gemara, he's quoting a Gemara here. The Gemara says we're only talking about responding. You should know what to respond to a non-Jewish apikoros. Aval Yisrael, if it's a Jewish apikoros, kol shekein de pakar, meaning ritzono lomar shu Yosef zilzo v'ligwa. You have to know who to fight with. You have to know who to argue with. The difference that he's saying is here, it's if a non-Jewish person, you want to argue with them, fair game. They want to learn, you want to learn, you're having a nice civil argument, presumably. Great. A Jewish apikoros, the Rambam's saying, it's not worth your time. Right? You're going to argue with them, but they're not going to listen to a word you're saying.
It's like
right?
Mishlein says,
you got to know who to, you got to know who to talk to, and if they're not going to listen to you, it's not worth your time. So he says, Shehu Yosef Zilzo Beliglug, Bepichav Ein Roy Laduni Mo Klal. Don't talk to them. Lefisha Hu Lo Yitukan, Vein Lo Refua Klal. You got to know. So that's what the Rambam here says. So now we have, let's see the Rabbeinu Yonah, and then we'll sum up, and I'll take a few questions. Rabbeinu Yonah, source number 7. Rabbi Lazar, we already started seeing this. So he connects A and B. She yikba asmo lo mo Torah. You should learn Torah kidei she yada lahashav adiver apikoros, in order to know what to respond to an apikoros. Shim lo yashivuhu kefita anosav vishkar yilamdu olam mayhem. So if you don't know how to respond to them, so then sheker, right? All their lies are going to come, and people are going to listen to them. The yishdu mayim aram, people are going to listen, are going to drink their dirty water. So if I'm having a dispute with somebody, and I don't know what I'm talking about, they're going to win the dispute, right? My rebbe from YU, Rabbi Meir Twersky, once pointed this out in a shir I think he gave on Torah Web once. He said that, you know, you have a bunch of, you have these college kids. They'll go to a secular university, and they'll go to a Bible class, and they'll have their professor, who's steeped in biblical criticism, tear them to shreds in the middle of class. Now, that doesn't mean the professor's right. It just means that the kids weren't prepared necessarily to answer. So if you don't know how to respond, then the person, so everybody else in the class sees the professor ripping this one kid with the yarmulke to shreds, and everybody's going to believe, oh, you know, the Judaism doesn't know what it's talking about, Torah is, the, you know, etc. That's a problem. Right? Then everybody's going to believe that God's wrong, right? That Torah is not from Shemayim, etc. Now, Rabbeinu Yonah is adding another element. What is an apikoros here? Somebody who doesn't believe in the oral Torah, the oral. We have the written Torah. That's the, you know, 24 books. You have your Torah, Nevi'im, Ksuvim. And you have the oral Torah. That's all the Talmud, the Mishnah, etc. So we didn't see this so far. It wasn't in the Gemara explicitly, as at least what we saw. So he adds that it's somebody who doesn't believe in Torah Shabbat Peh. V'hu adin l'morim shelo k'halacha. He has another person who's an apikoros. Somebody who teaches not according to halacha. So he gives a wrong answer. He doesn't know what he's talking about. He's bringing people to the wrong conclusions. V'lashon hefker hu, it's again, as we saw before, it's from the language of hefker. So what do we have so far? We have a big confusion. Right? What does this term apikoros mean?
It looks like an evolution of the word.
There is an evolution of the word, and hopefully at the end we'll tie it back. We'll see another possible, we'll make it even a little bit more confusing for everybody, but not yet. Let's just make it limited confusing for now. Apikoros means different things on different layers here. The most broad is the Rambam basically saying apikoros refers to anybody who doesn't believe in something important to Judaism. And then there's different layers in terms of your embarrassing comedy chachamim, etc., etc., etc. So what are we supposed to do about this? Right? So let's talk practical for a moment. I'll take one question and we'll talk. Yeah.
So this is sort of a historical idea. Some of this seems to be connected to Parshas Korah.
Okay.
Like some of these definitions consider Korah.
Some of these definitions consider Korach to be an apikoros, yeah.
There was really no debate with him, just a response. And the other point I think is a little tricky. The word shakud is very interesting, because he could have chosen a lot of other words, but shakud maybe connects to shekedim, the almonds.
Okay.
And
what's the message? Tells
us that Aaron's staff had shekedim on them as a sign that the Levium were going to be Zritim.
It's a nice idea. So the shakud is the connected to Aaron Shkedim, which ties into Korach. Okay.
The shakud is connected to witness. I mean, it's a play on word from Yirmiyahu, the pasuk that he quoted. Shakud ani atari lasoto. The reason that shakud is used, shin kuf dalet there, is a play on words. It means almonds, but almonds are the first ones to blossom, and that's why shkida is connected. The two are connected. Shkedim and shkida are not really two different words. They're just
the same shorah. Okay, very nice. That's the metaphor that he's using. That's the same thing. Okay, great. Did it quickly. Right.
Okay.
It's the first. Okay. Very nice. Excellent. Yeah, one last thing. So if you go with the Kofer Bakol, that's fine. That's what the Rambam is sort of the catchphrase. I reiterate to you from the Mishnah, it's not clear that that's true. From the Mishnah, it says three things. The other two, the assumption was that, like, you got God, you got that. There's an element here. There's one, it's referring to something specific. Again, we brought it out after that, and that's fine. So at the end, your Kofer Bakol, is that what the Rambam was saying? That's sort of, it's a catchphrase for anything that you go against Jewish thought. You're a kofer. You're not bikoros.
They believe in Torah.
So that would, according to this, that wouldn't be called, according to the Mishnah, that's not an apikoros. That's a problem for a different reason. That's just not considered an apikoros. So my only point here is that I'm not giving you a conclusive answer, but it's just important to realize that if you called somebody who doesn't believe that Torah is from Shemayim and apikoros, you might be correct in a colloquial use of the term, and you might be correct following the Rambam saying that it means anything that's against the Jewish thought. From the Mishnah itself, it would be incorrect, because the Mishnah lists that as... No, from the Mishnah that we read, that list, Torah not from being from Shemayim, is separate than an apikoros. There were three things. No tkiyas amesim from the Torah, Torah is not from Shemayim, and third was an apikoros. So all I'm saying is that what you're saying, that somebody who doesn't believe in Torah Mishmaim is called an apikoros, you might be correct from a colloquial view, you might be correct according to the Rambam's interpretation. From the Mishnah itself, it's inaccurate. Okay, but that's just something to know. It's not that important. So now, here's the question. Here's really what we need to focus on. Then what? What's the message? We've defined confusingly what an apikoros is. Whatever definition you go with, what am I supposed to do? And I do apologize. I know it's freezing in here. I don't know. They're working outside. The heat doesn't work. The doors are open. I'm sorry. The heat was working? Okay. All right. What?
In the mission, when it says HPS, HPS, Amesim and Atorah, that's using Torah, the inclusive term, not Amesim, Shet Torah, Kana, but rather the Torah.
Does it include Nevi'im and Ksuvim?
Yes, Amesim is not
explicitly. There's references. In this Gemara, it talks about, if we're dealing with this in detail, we can talk about the Shirat Tchias Amesim. We find allusions to Tchias Amesim, and the question is, so what do they mean here from the Torah? Do they mean the Chamisha from Shei Torah or not? We would have to go in depth into that Gemara. Okay, so again, our question is, so what are we supposed to do about this? There's an apikoros. We have to know what to respond to. What does this give me? What does this allow me to do? Right? What am I supposed to be doing here? How do I know how to respond to it? Right? So look at source number 8. So this is the second side of the page. Now, keep in mind, what did Rabbeinu Yonah made a strategic move, and we'll see somebody else who does this later. Rabbeinu Yonah that we just saw connected clause A to B. Have a shakud lo motora. In order to respond to the apikoros. So he already gave us the formula. What am I supposed to do to respond to an apikoros? Learn lots of Torah. Okay, let's see a different approach. Source number 8. This is the Magen Avos to the Rosh Beis. In these sources, and for this reason I don't always give you the background and the history of who the person was. For this specific topic, I think it's really important, because at the core of this discussion is how do we view other philosophies and what is the extent that I'm allowed to learn these other philosophies. So look at the Magen Avos of the Rashbats. So this was Shimon ben Semach Duran. Also Semach Duran is 14th and 15th century, known as the Rashbats or the Tashbats. He's a rabbinical authority, student of philosophy, astronomy, mathematics, and especially of medicine, which he practiced for a number of years in Palma. A major 15th century posek, his published decisions in matters of halacha have been widely quoted in halachic literature for hundreds of years. So he's reading this, he's well versed in philosophy, and this is what he writes. Vida mashatashiv es apikoros, mikan nahagu heter be'atzmenu lilmod hachachamot. It is from here, from this phrase, that we have, notice what it's like, let's be medayik here, be careful on how he phrases this, nahagnu. What's nahagnu? It is a custom. It has been a custom for us. We have nahagnu heter. We have created a leniency for ourselves in order to learn their chachma. Outside wisdom, outside philosophies, Kidei shemidivrei atzmam nashivam lomar lahem ki ein lahem rayos l'stor divrei Torah v'neviim. We can prove from their sources that they have no way of disproving Torah and Nevi'im, Ksuvim, etc. So, what are my options again to know what to respond to these apikorsim? So I can just learn Torah. Great. He's saying no. You got to go a step further. You got to know what they say, what they think, and you can therefore dispute on their own terms what their ideas are. Now, this is sort of radical, because you could make the argument that it's forbidden completely to read anything that's heretical, that's against our philosophy, that's against our religion. But here he says, Nahagnu Hater, in order to Damash Itasha Blapikoros. So keep reading here. This is a fascinating paragraph. Ve'ein Zebichlal. Barbara, this is for you. This is not what is included when it is written, Hakore Bisfarim Hachitsonium. When Rabbi Akiva said in the Mishnah we read before, if you read outside books, you have no place in Olam Haba, this is not what we're talking about. That's not the discussion. The Gemara there talks about that and says, Kigon Sifrei Ben Sira. It's talking about this these Proverbs of Ben Sira. Another type of book that was forbidden. So those are filled with mistakes and problems, and they're again, as I explained before, they're too close to Judaism where people can get confused, right? So those are books you can't read, but that's not this. This is you're reading the New Testament. We're not going to think that you're going to get confused with with Chumash. It's just a waste of time, maybe. This is another prohibition not to learn Greek wisdom. So that's written in the Gemara. So two places in the Gemara. So that's another problem, right? He's dealing with the problems here. Everybody's going to come to me and say, oh, you can't learn that stuff. Svarim Chitzonim. No, that's not Svarim Chitzonim. Oh, you can't learn that stuff. That's Chachma Yavanis. It's Greek wisdom. You're not allowed to learn Greek wisdom. So what's his response? That's not what the Gemara is talking about. Lo amru ze al Chachma shi'al derech hakira sichlis, ela al Chachma shi'aseh noheges bo'osos man, lidaber b'lashon remizah. That's not talking about rational thinking. Rational thinking is not a problem. It's not forbidden. You can learn Greek wisdom if it's teaching you what a good life is. Reading Aristotle, Rambam obviously read Aristotle to teach you how to live a proper life is not inherently problematic. You got to be careful, but it's not inherently problematic. What is it talking about when it says not to learn Chachma Yavanis? It's talking about talking in Lashon Remiza. What's Lashon Remiza? It was a way of speaking that some of the Greeks did at the time that was confusing. They specifically used words that were meant to distract you, confuse you. And it was sophistry. It was a way of speaking that was problematic. That's not wisdom. Wisdom's not a problem. This way of speaking was a problem. That's what Chachma Yavanis was. And he says, Kemoshe hu nira berishon mechagiga. That's the way he understands it. And even that wasn't a problem. That was allowed to speak in this way. But what happens, the famous Gemara that says, that there was a case back in the times of the Beis HaMikdash that there was one of these people who knew this sophistry, this way to speak, this confusing way. He basically convinced somebody to bring a pig up to be brought as a sacrifice, and as they were bringing the pig up the walls of the Beis HaMikdash, the Gemara says that it stuck its claws into the Beis HaMikdash, into the walls, and the Gemara, again, had to understand this exactly, says that the whole world shook at that point in time, and it was basically a disastrous situation. So the Gemara there says, because there are people who use this sophistry, this confusing way of speaking to confuse people to do bad things, so stay away from that. But even that itself wasn't inherently forbidden. So all he's doing here is he's saying over and over and over again, anytime you find any restriction in the Gemara to learning outside stuff, it's really not what we're talking about here. You can learn other philosophies, especially if it's going to help you debate them. Skip for a second to the third paragraph here. Third paragraph, uvizmanenu zeh, so in our time, anushoktim, look how he learns that, he uses that same word, anushoktim lomot Torah, lahashivet shteya umos abos achar chasimos atamu. So we are shoket. So this is like Rabbeinu Yonah. He says, how am I going to fight them? Number one is, I got to know Torah perfectly. I got to know Torah really, really, really well in order to dispute both the Christians and the Muslims. I need to know all the Torah. And he continues on that. But then he also says, on the bottom of that paragraph, last line, Ulezeh nagu hater batzmeno likro sefer shibushehem, kadesh tetze lanu tshuva nitzlis konegdem v'divrei hasfarim. But we also learn their stuff. So not only do we learn Torah that we need to do, but we also learn their stuff in order to respond to them. That's how the Rashbatz learns this Mishnah and Pirkei Avos. Again, very in line with his time, and he's admitting to it. This is how we created this Heter for us, because we need to do this nowadays in order to respond to them. Yeah?
When he says Heter Bat Zmeinu, it sounds like he's referring to those who are dealing with the dialogue.
Right, so it's a good question. Right, so it's a good question. Who are we talking about here? And this is an important question. Like, does this mean so every single person should be Dama Shatashiv Lahapi Chorus? Or are we talking about the people who are dealing with the disputes? Is this a, let's say, put it this way, is this a mitzvah? Right? When Rabbi Lazar says Dama Shatashiv Lahapi Chorus, is he saying everybody needs to do this? Or there are certain people who need to be able to do this? Professionals. So you'll find different opinions here in the sources. I think it's clear. Let's go to extremes. I think it's clear that for somebody, and you'll find this. We won't read it inside right now, but you'll find this, that whoever says you can read Sfarim, all of these Dama Shatashiv stuff, you have to know yourself. If you're going to, and that's why actually, does he say it here? Yeah. So he says here on the bottom of the last paragraph, vidavitshuvaschazos lefni miata omel. So what's the next clause of the Mishnah? Know before whom you're toiling. So a lot of Mefarshim connect those things together, meaning you have to know that this is all for God. If you're gonna read this stuff and it's gonna cause you to go off the derech, right? If you're enticed by this and you want to read this in order to free yourself from the shackles of Judaism, etc. That's not necessarily a good way to look. But if that's your mindset, that's a problem. That's not for, then don't do this. You have no heter to do this. This is for people who are going to be disputing. But let's go to the other extreme. As I told you, that secular campuses. How can we not be prepared for this in our world unless you're enclosed in your Dalet Amos and you never open up the doors to anybody and you don't work in a secular environment and you never speak to anybody about these ideas? I went to last week before I wasn't here, went with my family to Camelback. As we were, the bellhop who was helping me with the bags literally started talking to me about the apocalypse and how the Jews are the chosen people, and he's literally quoting to me scriptures about from Ezekiel and from this and from that as to how everything that's going on now is leading to the end of days. And okay, I just shook my head. It wasn't worth my time to respond to him. I just gave him a tip and that was it. But I'm saying, but you encounter this everywhere you go. And if you don't know, Rabbi Alan Schwartz, who we had here as a scholar in residence a few years ago, the rabbi of Ohad Tzedek in the city. So he said the reason why he became a Tanakh expert was because he was on a tiul in Israel and some Christian missionary came up to him and asked him, what do you guys think about, Yeshayahu Perek Vav or Perek Yud Beis or this or that or whatever, and how really is talking about Jesus and this and that. Yes. And he had no response because he didn't know it. And from then he committed. He's like, I'm going to learn Tanakh, so I'm going to be able to answer them about all that's Heve Shakel Lomotor, right? So I don't so now I have to learn all the other stuff. Okay, but you have to know this is, you're going to a college campus. You have to know what to respond to the people who are going to fight against you. Yeah.
Over 50 years ago, and
part of our regular curriculum of that we had to take was a course in comparative religions. Mm-hmm. And we learned the intricacies of the four basic religions.
Right. Yeah. So especially again, if we're in a culture where this is something that's expected and we're learning, we need to know our stuff. And we need to know what to respond to them. Okay. I'm sorry it's so distracting today. I'm gonna have to deal with this at some point. We'll tell them they gotta pick it up Saturday night next time. Yeah. Back. Right. Yep. Excellent point. Okay. Now, somebody tell me what time it is because I can't see it on my watch, on my clock. 10:13. Okay. So we're not going to get to everything. Let's see one more source, and then we'll save some for next week. Look at source number 9. So this is the opposite view. This is the Chida and the Zeruah Yamin. This is his book on Perkei Avos. The Chida is Reb Chaim Yosef David Azulai, known in Hebrew as the acronym Chida. He was 18th century. Notice what his accolades are here. Halachist, Kabbalist. So he's not a philosopher. He's a Kabbalist. Emissary and bibliographer, etc. He's born in Jerusalem. Fine. So he's going to take a different approach. That's not going to be open to philosophy because there again, there's two basic approaches. Oversimplifying things. There's the philosophical, rationalist, history that we have, and then there's the more mystical, Kabbalistic history that we have. So this is, we just saw the Rashbats, the Tashbeis, on the mystical, on the philosophy side. Okay, so we saw the Tashbeis on the philosophical side. Now we're going to see the Chida on the other side. So look here at source number 9. Rabbi Lezer Omer, Rabbi Shakud Lomo Torah, Vidam HaShetash of Lapikoris, Klomar, Ein Sorach Lomod B'Sifrei Chitzonim. You do not have to. Notice again the contrast, the direct contrast to the Tashbeis. You do not need to learn these outside books. B'Tainos Shetzarach Lahash of Lapikoris, with the excuse that, with the claim that I need to know what to respond to these apikorsim. Kasher hein ba'avon ko yomru b'lachtachem lomod b'sifreyam l'shoneyam b'goyeyam. L'zeh omer v'shakul l'motor. He says, no, we're coming to exclude that. Don't read the outside books. Just learn Torah. V'shakul l'motor. Haser tipshu zeh la'ber azman ha'yakar. V'shakul, don't waste your time, the stupidity. To waste your time. That is shakud mahir vosek tadir lomod atar kedusha. You have one job and one job only. Learn with passion, with alacrity, as much Torah as possible. Ki be'esek haTorah levad im titbonen yadua teda la'ashiv la'pikoros. If you learn Torah enough, you're going to know what to answer. Ki Torah Hashem Temima Lo Tesar Koba. Within Torah, which is complete, there is nothing missing, and we'll see an element of this later in Pirkei Avos of Afachba the Kula Ba, that everything is encapsulated within Torah. Rach Shetei Kashaka. But there is a requirement here. There's a prerequisite. It must be done with zrizus, with alacrity, with passion. Dinyano Mahir Umishtadel, do it quickly, don't waste your time. Work hard, v'tamid, always lamo Torah, v'zeh ikar kol, that's all you need. So here we have two contrasting opinions, all reading the same Mishnah and finding their own sort of views within the Mishnah. Is it that all we have is Torah? Don't waste your time with other things. So if you're going to go that route, you're going to connect clause A to clause B. Heve shakud lamo Torah is going to be connected to dam hashetash of l'apikoros. So the way that your dam hashetash of l'apikoros is through heve shakud lamo Torah. The other way of going about this is, no, these are two separate ideas. Yes, learn Torah. Great, awesome, we love Torah. But you also need to be Dhamma Shatash Lapi Chorus, and the way to do that is not necessarily only through Torah, but it's also through understanding their words. Understanding how to respond to them through their own philosophies and religions.
does he address the fact that you can debate, you know, on their side?
Him? He says within Torah everything's encapsulated. Again, so practically, how is that going to work? You have to know. Yes, I mean you're right. You might need to be trained well within Torah how to respond to that. Meaning, you still have to know what psukim they are going to go to, right? Maybe I'm not sure what he would say about disputations, but you know, you'd have to know what psukim they're going to go to and say that's not pshat. That's not what it means. It means this. It doesn't mean I have to know every single. You know, I don't have to read the New Testament to know everything about that. I don't have to read that to know it. I can respond through the Torah text. Interesting. I'll leave you with one thing to think about for further study, which we're not going to cover. For those interested in this mystical versus rationalist sort of philosophical debate, which spans the past forever, but specifically in the medieval times, with the Rambam going forward, Rabbeinu Yonah, who's source number 6, his level of involvement in the whole anti-rational / Kabbalistic ideas is really important. So he was involved to some extent in the burning of the Rambam's books, which was the anti-rational stance was against Rambam, Mor Nevuchim, etc. You shouldn't read this. It's not good. It's happy courses, maybe. If you would say that, obviously nowadays we've moved away from that. But this was a huge, ravaging debate back in the medieval times. Interesting here. Again, so what does Rabbeinu Yonah do, even though he doesn't explicitly tie this to a rationalist versus secular versus philosophy discussion? He goes this route that he predates Rabbi the Chida, but he says that how do I know how to respond? Not that I read the outside stuff, because he was against reading the outside stuff. He wasn't a philosopher. So how do I know how to respond? Heve shakal b'mol Torah. He connects the two together. I got to keep learning Torah. Torah is the ikar. Torah is everything. Torah is what I need to know. Next week we're going to continue this discussion to some extent. There's one interesting source specifically on how to understand what an apikoros is. We'll save that for source number 17, and then we still have to do the third clause, lifnei miata omel, and to know that you're going to get reward. We're going to talk about, remember we had a Mishnah in the past, all the way in the beginning, that spoke about reward, that you have to know that it says that you shouldn't work for reward. So why here are we saying, know what reward you're going to get? I thought I'm not doing this for reward. So we're going to have to deal with that, and then we'll have some cute ideas as well, not necessarily specifically on this debate, but within the Mishnah that's going to help us get a better, deeper understanding and perhaps a nice takeaway for self-improvement. And we'll see that could be a whole shiur on its own. If not, we'll start the following Mishnah in the second half of the shiur. 1 and then 2. Yeah.
Many years ago, my husband and I were driving home from my mother's house, and the missionary stopped us. She asked us loads of questions, and I swear my husband was in the car because he's a walking encyclopedia of our history. And he was able to knock her down on everything. And finally she says, okay, I have one last question for you. Why aren't all of you in Israel? And he said, that's a good question.
Okay. Yes.
So a variation on that story. My wife and I were in the city, and the Jews were, what's his name, were standing giving out the literature and started to engage me about some of these things. And I said, excuse me, Rachel, you want to take over? And I think in about 12 seconds, not only was he totally confused, but Rachel had said to him, you're a Jewish person. Why are you doing this? Especially after I knocked down all the things that you raised. And then the kicker. Would you, if we invited you, would you consider coming to us for Shabbat? And you could see he was stunned. He was stunned. And he didn't know how to answer right away because it wasn't in his plan book or whatever. And then he just smiled and said, I can't. And had we had more time at the time, I am convinced Rachel would have convinced him. He would have come for Shabbos, and then who knows? Nobody can guarantee. But that's a different requirement, knowing how to answer on a Jewish guy who is kofer b'ikur, as opposed to a rabbi,
right.
which flies in the face of one of the points that you made earlier, not to waste your time.
Well, maybe yes, maybe not. I mean, it depends how you what your inference from your story. So you're inferring that if I had more time, it would have worked. I'm inferring from your story that you could have talked to that guy all day, it wouldn't have worked. Yeah. Right? And that's really what he said. You knocked him down. And he's still like, I can't, because this
is... I began to see the doubts in his eyes. I began to see it.
So yeah, if it followed through, then you would have a good... But you're right. Again, I think that the answer is it depends on the context. It depends on the person. You have to know the situation. There could be... I don't know if it's a dichotomous thing of you know, this category of people versus that category of people. The real operating principle is my debating going to... either convince that person, which is one element, but even perhaps more importantly here, is it going to, if I don't debate, is it going to cause a chilul Hashem? That's another element that's involved. So you got to keep both those in mind. So sometimes, even if you're not going to convince them, you still need to do it to preserve the Kiddush Hashem. One last comment by Paul, and then we're going to bench.
I used to have a good friend from youth who made us young. He was a copper in the army of Israel and a very, very well-fed Zionist. He used to go to shul in Tel Aviv and they yelled at him at the chorus and he stopped going. At the time he told me, like 10 years ago, I didn't know what he meant.
We still don't know
I
what
wonder which of the definitions
right.
applied to him. I can't ask him because he died like
So it's a sad story, but I think that it gets back to what your point was from before, was that nowadays, perhaps unfortunately, the word is thrown around too much to anybody who doesn't believe exactly what I believe you should be doing, right? So if you wear that type of yarmulke, you know, apikoros, or if you do this and that and the other thing, apikoros. I think that we need to raise the bar. If we're going to use these terms, we need to raise the bar. You need to work harder to earn the term apikoros rather than just, you know, lower level transgression.